Coming up next, from the movie All Quiet on the Western Front, Paul Bäumer addresses Professor Cantorek's class on the harsh realities of war.
I can't tell you anything you don't know. We live in the trenches out there. We fight. We try not to be killed. Sometimes we are. That's all.
No. No, Paul.
I've been there. I know what it's like.
That's not what one dwells on, Paul.
I heard you in here reciting that same old stuff. Making more Iron Men. More young heroes. You still think it's beautiful and sweet to die for your country, don't you? We used to think you knew. The first bombardment taught us better. Dirty and painful to die for your country. When it comes to dying for your country, it's better not to die at all. There are millions out there dying for their country. What good is it?
Paul!
You ask me to tell them how much they're needed out there. He tells you, go out and die. Oh, but if you'll pardon me, it's easier to say go out and die than it is to do it.
Coward!
And it's easier to say it than to watch it happen.
You're a liar!
No! Fine! I'm sorry, Dalmer, but I must say...
No use talking like this. You won't know what I mean. Only, it's been a long while since we enlisted out of this classroom. So long, I thought maybe the whole world had learned by this time. Only now they're sending babies. And they won't last a week. I shouldn't have come on leave. Up at the front, you're alive or you're dead, and that's all. You can't fool anybody about that very long. And up there, we know we're lost and done for, whether we're dead or alive. 3 years we've had of it. 4 years. And every day a year. And every night a century. And our bodies are earth. And our thoughts are clay. And we sleep and eat with death. And we're done for because you can't live that way and keep anything inside you. I shouldn't have come on leave. I'll go back tomorrow. I've got 4 days more, but I can't stand it here. I'll go back tomorrow. Sorry.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to a debate on state surveillance between former CIA and NSA Director Michael Hayden and Harvard Law Professor Alan Dershowitz. And on the other side is journalist Glenn Greenwald and Reddit co-founder Alexei Bohannon. They argue about, be it resolved, state surveillance is a legitimate defense of our freedoms. Team opposed won the resolution with a 13% vote gain.
General Hayden.
Facts.
Okay. If Edward Snowden were able to do that, that would not only be a violation of the laws of the United States, it would also violate the laws of physics. Okay? He had access to NSA's administrative network. He did not have access, thank God, to NSA's operational network. That's not the first time he said that. There's no one in NSA who believes there's any possibility that that could be true, factually true. He may claim it's artistically true in the sense that somebody in NSA who actually had authority and was on the right network might do that. But that's my segue to Alan, because this is very, very carefully overseen. You can't... Actually, the rest of the Snowden statement is actually quite interesting. For the first time, I think this might be Snowden 2.0, because he actually makes a distinction between what's possible and what is actually being done, something that a lot of folks don't do.
Well, let me follow up on that. The United States Supreme Court on Tuesday of this week heard one of the most important arguments that it will hear this year. And the issue that was before the Supreme Court is, if I were to get arrested, say for jaywalking or for driving my car without a seatbelt, under current rules, the policeman searching me can seize my iPhone and can access all the data in my iPhone, including my medical records, my tax records. This isn't the NSA. This is what happens when modern technology confronts the Fourth Amendment. The Supreme Court heard argument. 9 justices, 8 of them expressed their views, and then there was Justice Thomas. But 8 of them expressed their views. And they were deeply divided. And I really urge you to read the transcript because it really shows how our Supreme Court works. You can tell that they were deeply confused, deeply troubled, and trying to figure out a way of applying the intention of the framers who wrote in 1793 and couldn't imagine this modern technology and the words of the Fourth Amendment, which talk about reasonable, to the modern technology. And the Supreme Court doesn't only write for today, it writes for next year and next decade and the decades after that. Again, this is a work in progress. We must get accountability. We are trying to get accountability. Technology is always ahead of the law. I try to teach my students in 50 years at Harvard not how to practice law today, but how to practice law when you're my age 50 years from now. It's always a quest. The struggle for justice never stays won. But that doesn't mean you make cell phones or iPhones illegal. It means you try to work to constrain them and to create accountability. The answer to your question is, we don't have enough accountability now, but we're getting there. And you can help us get there. By the way, this is not an American problem. The Five Eyes work together, United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and England. They share intelligence information. You're not foreigners when it comes to your own government. Your government is trying to protect you as well, and your Supreme Court is trying to struggle with these issues. Don't make it a debate, as Mr. Greenwald still is making it, between good and evil. There are good people struggling to do the right thing. Let's keep the struggle going, but let's not throw out surveillance, which requires sometimes surveilling innocent people. For example, the videos.
You know, Alan,
it will catch a woman going to her abortion clinic.
Equal time
it will catch
here.
Donald
so
Sterling
I'm
going to his mistress.
Talk.
Access Sacramento broadcasts great speeches and interviews every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Or you can get the podcast at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
King, and so you let me bring Glenn in.
So I begin by saying that U.S. national security state officials are very adept and very skillful at presenting a public image that is wildly different than the reality. And of course, the whole NSA scandal began when James Clapper, the director of national intelligence, went before our Senate and was asked whether or not the NSA is mass collecting data about millions of Americans, and he looked senators in the eye and said, "No, sir." And then the very first story that we reported from the Snowden archive 2 months later proved that the NSA was doing exactly that, which the top national security official in the United States government falsely denied to the Senate and to the public. And so when you hear things like Mr. Snowden, who whatever else you think of him has never been proven to prevaricate, is not telling the truth when he says that sitting at his desk he could have wiretapped anyone, I can guarantee you that is exactly what NSA analysts have the capability to do that. And the evidence for it, don't rely on my word or his, is the X Key Score program, which we reported on in The Guardian in September of 2013 with ample documents that show an analyst training manual walking them through and saying, when you want to eavesdrop on a particular email, here's the screen where you do it, and you enter the email and the justification. Nobody checks what it is that you're doing. You simply then start getting those emails exactly as Mr. Snowden said. And the question of whether there's really any safeguards, he said, oh, it's in a lockbox. Don't worry, we're collecting all your data, but it's very well protected. Aside from the fact that history proves that you cannot trust governments to collect that information and not abuse it, think about this fact. The NSA is an agency where Edward Snowden sat for many months and downloaded all of their most sensitive documents. They had no idea that he was doing it. To this day, they have no idea what he took. They say that all the time, even though they've spent tens of millions of dollars trying to figure it out. Does that sound like a very well-managed system to you that you can trust with all of your data not to be abused? And the last point I want to make is, you know, Professor Dershowitz, for some reason, keeps returning to the issue of motives, which I said at the beginning, I don't think matters. I don't think it matters.
What is pretext?
If somebody invaded Iraq because they're an evil person or was incredibly misguided and immoral. But here's what I do know. In an interview before the event that he gave, Professor Dershowitz said, the NSA talks about this FISA court as oversight, and yet the FISA court is pretty much of a joke. It just gives out warrants, as he said, like lollipops. And I agree with him on that. And the reason is this, whatever the motives are, the climate in the United States after 9/11 got out of control. 9/11 was a very traumatic event. I was in Manhattan on that day. I remember the emotions it triggers to this day. And the balance that we always have or try to maintain got completely out of whack, so that everything that was justified in the name of terrorism, from destroying a country of 26 million people, to putting people in prison without charges, to torturing them, to spying on everybody's emails and telephone calls, anything that got justified in the name of torture got done. That is what is wrong, that is what is dangerous, and that is what I hope you'll reject tonight by voting against the motion.
So are you then prepared, Mr. Greenwald, to withdraw your accusation of pretext? Because you say motive doesn't matter, and you can't have pretext without a bad motive.
My basis for saying that terrorism is pretext, and I doubt you want me to read it again, although I'd like to, is the federal court judge, President Obama's own panel.
They never
the
said that.
Think tank.
They
I
never
quoted,
said that.
I quoted
you, show
them
me the word pretext.
That
show me the word pretext.
I quoted them saying
show me
that
the, word
the
pretext.
Program has, you can keep screaming that and it doesn't change the point. That
what's
everybody
the point?
Who has looked at the issue has said that these programs have played virtually no
That's
role
a completely,
in stopping terrorism. It is not the reason that it is being done, because it does not work.
It's a completely different point. You're saying what they have said is they were well-intentioned. It wasn't the pretext, but there's no evidence that it worked. If you can't understand the difference between those two statements, then you really are what you described yourself as not being previously.
Senator Wyden, the threat has been greatly exaggerated. Greatly exaggerated. That is what three Democratic senators with access to the classified information, which you don't have, actually said.
The results were exaggerated,
okay.
Not the motive.
So hot debate, that's for sure. And before we go to opening closing statements, I want to provide Alexis Ohanian the opportunity to reflect on Snowden's statement and what kind of came out of you from that statement that you think is a key point for your side.
Wow, well, this has gotten spicy. like I said, I'm the nerd here, all right? I still want to point out that there, my first opening remarks about the fact that what we are doing for mass surveillance actually undermines the strength and security of our nations, as well as oversteps the bounds and the rights of privacy that we all have. Like, this is still a fundamental truth about what is being done from a technological level. And then ultimately on top of that, remember, Canadians, Americans, right, our governments work for us. They are ultimately responsible and beholden to us. We employ them, we sometimes hire them, sometimes we fire them, but they work for us. And the way this entire thing has been handled over the last 20 years, to give you a perception of just how much this technology has advanced, all right? Technology does not grow linearly, it grows exponentially. And what I mean by that is, if you think about how much technology has boomed in the last 20 years versus the 20 years before it, it is an order of 10x, right? We can do things now over the last 20 years that we couldn't have even imagined some 20 years ago. And a lot of those things are great, but some of them are not. And one of the things that has run amok because of this technological boom, because of how much of a role the internet plays in our lives, is this surveillance state. And the principles we used to keep our nations, our free nations, safe in the 20th century don't work in the 21st. They are causing abuses that we can do something about. And I hope that's why you will vote with us against this motion.
So, moving the debate along, it's now time for closing statements. We're going to give each of our debaters 3 minutes. They're going to speak in the reverse order of the opening. So, Glenn, that means you are up first.
Good. So, I feel like I anticipated moderately well one of the problems that this debate was going to entail, which is the ability of each side to make claims about what the thing is that you're supposed to vote on, which is the surveillance state. Is it this nice, well-motivated, work in progress where we just try to eavesdrop on the terrorists but oh so accidentally and just very occasionally bump into your Gmail account by accident? Or is it what the NSA actually described it as being when they didn't know that you were listening, when they were talking only amongst themselves, when they were planning on what their institutional aspiration actually would be? Collect it all, sniff it all, process it all, know it all, exploit at all. Those are not my words. Those are the words of the NSA working in a top secret environment, because that is actually what you should be voting on, is what they're actually doing, and not Professor Dershowitz's aspirations for what one day he hopes it someday might be. The way to get to that point is by rejecting what it now is as excessive and menacing and dangerous. The second point that I think is vital to make is the one that Alexis just touched on, which is this now mockery over the idea that what kept us safe from the Soviet Union is simply woefully inadequate. Namely, not getting proof that someone is wearing an Al-Qaeda hat, but going to a court and having evidence be presented that someone is a legitimate surveillance target before allowing the NSA to invade their system. If you go back and look at what was said by Ronald Reagan and world leaders in the 70s and 80s, it was the Soviet Union is the greatest threat ever to mankind. We went to wars to prevent them from doing what we said they want to do. And now suddenly it becomes, oh, those were nice, reasonable people who we can manage. It's really these terrorists in a cave who we have to fundamentally dismantle our system of liberties in order to protect ourselves from. And General Hayden, keep asking for facts, and I think I've presented facts a lot in this debate, but let me just leave you with a few more. In 2009, the Global News Service McClatchy characterized the threat of terrorism this way, quote, undoubtedly more American citizens died overseas from traffic accidents or intestinal illnesses than from terrorism. Harper's, in March 2011, offered this statistic. The number of American civilians who died worldwide in terrorist attacks last year, 8. The minimum number who died after being struck by lightning, 29. Terrorism is a real threat. It is not anything to make light of. But there are all sorts of threats that we guard against and keep ourselves safe from, not by dismantling our fundamental liberties like the right to privacy or the limitations on the government ability to know what we're saying, but by balancing them and by affirming the values that we're trying to protect in the first place. Thanks.
Professor Dershowitz, your closing statement.
I think we need less surveillance than what we have now, but more than what we would get from the other side that would require a warrant to specify with particularity the suspicion level against anybody on whom we would surveil at all. We need a reasonable middle ground on which we can use some surveillance based on less than probable cause in order to target people who are trying to do harm for us. Now, terrorism is real, and it's different than viruses. It's different than being struck by lightning. It's an essential attack on the very core of our country and our people. I actually believe, and the reason I'm on this side of the debate, is that one of the greatest threats that civil liberties faces in this country would be another terrorist attack like 9/11. Even if fewer people are killed and in traffic accidents, if we had another attack like 9/11, the devastating impact it would have on our civil liberties would be incalculable. If you don't believe me, just think back to Canada in 1970. Some of you may be old enough to remember this, when two terrorist kidnappings resulted in the invocation of the War Measures Act, which deprived Canadians all over the country of some of their basic civil liberties. I know, because I, along with Erwin Cutler, served as consultants to the Liberal Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau and to the Liberal Attorney General John Turner in those days to try to figure out a way of reducing the impact on civil liberties without diminishing the prevention of terrorism, which was a real threat in those days. It's the interest of every person who cares about liberty to take reasonable steps to prevent another mass casualty attack. A surveillance system directed against terrorism and those facilitating terrorism, which will have false positives, which will result in the intrusion on some privacy of some people who are innocent, is essential both to the defense of our citizens and to the protection of our liberties. I urge you to vote for this proposition and to allow our governments, all of our governments, the Five Eyes, to work together to allow us to have the intelligence necessary to prevent a recurrence of 9/11. Will it prevent it? Nobody knows for sure. Will it increase the likelihood of preventing it? I think we can be fairly assured that's the case. We need to improve our system of surveillance. We need not scrap it, because reasonable state surveillance is a legitimate defense of our freedoms. Do not vote to tie our hands, to deprive us of an essential tool in the real war against real terrorism. Vote yes on this proposition if you want to see a proper balance struck between the legitimate need for surveillance and the equally legitimate need for privacy.
Alexis, your 3 minutes.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Dershowitz, it sounds like we might be winning you over, at least with the idea of some less surveillance. Now, look, technology has enabled so much. It's made my career possible. It's made so many others. With that technology, as I've said before, we've enabled a surveillance state that is out of control. All right, and I started this from the very beginning. I said, look, fundamentally, this is a problem because, one, it affects our economic strength. And economic strength is a core part of our national security. It affects the underpinnings of the very technology that makes the internet work. The things we're doing along has a huge impact on data protection, on localization, and it gives comfort to the leaders of countries that want to use the internet to spy on their own citizens, to surveil them. This is important because upon hearing all of those things, it still doesn't cover the fundamental point here, which is that what we are doing in the name of security actually makes us less secure. It makes us more vulnerable. Remember the example I gave of the key, all right? That is the layperson version of what we are doing. We are finding flaws in the system, and we are holding onto that key for ourselves, leaving every one of our homes vulnerable. And yes, I am from a generation that can't imagine a world without the internet, but I have a feeling most of you feel like the internet has become pretty indispensable. And yes, it is the place where we go not only to start companies, but to have discussions, sometimes combative ones, to make new friends, to have relationships, to find that there are other people all over the World Wide Web, that have ideas we can benefit from and then remix and share. And all of those things are possible because we have a flat internet. Sorry, Tom Friedman, the world is not flat, but the World Wide Web is. And our nations have done so much to lead the way in innovation because every one of us as citizens had the belief that our private most thoughts were safe and were secure. And so what I'm saying is this: state surveillance is not acceptable in this internet age, because for all that we have had, for all of this innovation, it can all be undone. We are doing far more of it on far more innocent people than we have ever done before. And like I said, in the past, technologically it wasn't possible and the laws kept us doing direct surveillance. Today, the laws have been weakened and the technology makes it cheap and easy to gobble up all of that data about every single one of us. And this is an unprecedented situation where surveillance disproportionately affects innocent people. And there is a technological answer, but it is not what is being done. And so I will leave you with this. I know there are good people at the NSA trying to keep us safe. I know they have our best interests at heart. I know the surveillance state is full of people who were maybe preoccupied with whether or not they could, that they didn't stop to think about whether they should. Thank you.
Final opening statement goes to you, General Hayden.
Thank you.
Closing statement.
Sorry. Thank you. Well, I started out as pernicious, picked up untruthful and untrustworthy along the way, but apparently as a former U.S. intelligence official, I'm a good storyteller, so here goes. Okay. Talk about scare tactics. We need to run the tape sometime and count how many times Alan and I said terrorism and how many times Glenn and Alexis said surveillance state. Okay. What do they really mean by surveillance state? 1.7 billion U.S. emails a day collected? No, that's just not true. The surveillance state is out of control. They're monitoring, just now, Alex, every single one of us. We're gathering up the information on far more innocent people. I need to know the what. It's hard for me to counter that. What is it you think we're doing? I love the Snowden quote. And, you know, it kind of, you know, it covers your text messages, your web history, your searches you've ever made. That's Google. That's not NSA. Okay? Boston bombing. Tsarnaev kids visited jihadist websites. After the attack, the American security establishment gets slapped around by its political leadership. How come you didn't know they went to jihadist websites? because we're not allowed to monitor internet activity of Americans or lawful permanent residents. And as a matter of policy, we're not allowed to monitor your internet activity either, along with the Canadians and the Australians and the New Zealanders. What they're describing simply isn't going on. With regard to the Soviets and the threat, I didn't say they were reasonable or safe. I just said their communications were on a dedicated, isolated network where yours never coexisted. And that creates a new dilemma. With regard to oversight, Glenn mentions Judge Leon, who said that the program was probably unconstitutional. That makes Glenn's side 1-for-37 in court decisions on the constitutionality of this. And oh, by the way, Leon stayed his own decision. And with regard to the three Democrats who articulated opposition to this program for both civil liberties and effectiveness questions, those three were on a 15-person committee in the Senate. And those three were outvoted consistently 12-3. NSA's mantra, collect it all, doesn't mean collect at all. They drown. They can't use it. What it means is they want the ability to cover any communications by any method of at any time by those who would do you harm. Trust me, if what Glenn says is true, and if what Alexis fears is true were true, I'd vote for him too. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, a superb debate on a complicated, important topic, and we couldn't have done it without these four gentlemen. So a big round of applause for our debaters. Bravo. And a big thank you to our hosts tonight who year after year have supported this debate series tirelessly. The Oreo Foundation, Peter and Melanie Monk, thank you for this debate series. Now, for a crucial part of tonight's proceedings, which one of these two teams has been able to sway opinion in this hall? Let's review where the vote stood at the beginning of tonight before we'd listened to the last hour and 40 minutes of debate and conversation. So can I have the numbers for the initial audience vote? 32% agreed with the motion, 47% disagreed, not insignificant, 21% undecided. We then asked the percentage of you that would change your vote, if you're depending on what you heard. A debate very much in play with 87% saying they're open to changing their vote.
That's all, folks.